This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Kenya sent its troops to Somalia in 2011 to push Al-Shabaab and protect its borders from the group's terror attacks. Months later, Kenya joined the African Union mission in Somalia.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting. Details coming up. Also, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok is in Washington to persuade the United States and other Western governments to lift sanctions against Sudan. And according to the Family Early Warning System Network, unusually heavy rains are expected to swamp much of East Africa for the rest of December. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Kenya's president has said his forces will remain part of the Africa Union mission in Somalia and leave the country when it's secure and stable. The president's statement came at a time Kenya's forces are facing hostility in parts of Somalia for their support of the Jubaland administration, which the Somali government has refused to recognize. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
This month, Kenya and Somalia agreed to normalize relations after months of diplomatic tensions between the two countries, which had differences on many issues, including the disputed Jubaland elections. Kenya has been the only country in the region to recognize the outcome of the contest, in which Ahmed Madobe was re-elected for another 4 years. The Somali government is planning another election for Jubaland Regional State. George Musumali is the director of the Center of Risk Management in Africa.
So what is really happening here is that the Somali government is pulling its muscles, showing very well that we do not recognize the government in Jubaland. And this informed the decision to have the Jubaland vice president being denied access into Somalia. And at this coming hot in the heels of now having Kenyans being removed from Gedoland to other areas of operation and bringing in a more friendly force. This force, the Ethiopian force, is more friendly to the Mogadishu government. I think we are going to see a lot of activities happening around that area.
Kenya sent its troops to Somalia in 2011 to push Al-Shabaab and protect its borders from the group's terror attacks. Months later, Kenya joined the African Union mission in Somalia, known as AMISOM. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said on Thursday his country will be in Somalia for a longer term.
As I have stated before, our troops will continue being a part of AMISOM until such time that our objective has been achieved.
Kenya has troops in Lower and Middle Juba and Gedo regions, which share borders with Kenya. Mohamed Abdullahi Gardub is a Lug district commissioner in Gedo region. He says his area is under the control of central government forces. Gardub says the security of the district is good. The area is being protected by the forces from the federal government and the other ones who are in charge of the security. The forces are not only in Lok district, but they are in other 7 districts of the Gedo region. This week, Jubaland deputy leader was denied entry in Gedo region. Musumali says the Gedo region exposes Kenya to more security risks.
Now, being moved from Gedo land, an area that they really have a lot of interest in, clearly exposes Kenya to more insecurity because we don't know how the Ethiopians are going to play it. So Kenya should be worried about that.
The issue of Jubaland leadership has been the tension for years between the Mogadishu administration and Kenya. In remarks to this month to the United Nations Security Council, James Wan, the UN representatives in Somalia, said the disagreement of the August polls in Jubaland poses a risk of violence, clan division and external interference. Swan called on the leaders to address issues through dialogue, compromise, and pragmatism. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Earlier this year, a wave of anti-foreigner violence hit South Africa. Nigerians living and working in the community were among those targeted. Nigeria's top diplomat in South Africa says one way to fight xenophobia is to reach out to people in rural areas to foster closer ties among nations. Mike Mboni has the story from Pretoria.
The Nigerian High Commissioner to South Africa says programs fighting xenophobia should reach out to rural communities to explain the need to tolerate fellow Africans. Kabiru Bala says some rural residents may not understand the agreements governments have made on immigration. For instance, many South Africans don't know that an agreement between Pretoria and Abuja gives their citizens the right to live and work in the other country.
So that a South African at the grassroots will understand that if he sees a foreign national, if he sees a Nigerian, he should appreciate that, yes, a Nigerian has a right to come to South Africa and live in South Africa as a human being legitimately. He should come here. He is free because the government to government have signed agreements that allows free movement within the law that they should come here and do legitimate business.
Bala says Nigerians also need to understand that Africans and non-Africans have the right to visit their country. Between 2 million and 5 million foreigners live in South Africa, or less than 1% of the population. But with a weakening economy, some South Africans blame migrants for the country's 29% unemployment rate. When that anger boiled over into attacks on foreigners in September, tensions flared between South Africa and Nigeria in September. Abuja evacuated some of its citizens. In retaliation for attacks on Nigerian-owned businesses in South Africa, some Nigerians attacked South African businesses in their country. Others called for boycotts. Bala says relations improved after Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari visited South Africa in October.
Now, I think with the visit of the president, a lot has happened to make the situation even a lot calmer now. There is a lot of calm now. We are not witnessing those attacks, and we hope that with the year coming to a close, the year 2020 will be a better year that will not witness any attack in this country against any foreign national.
Vusi Sebanda is the chairperson of African Diaspora Forum, a Johannesburg human rights organization. He says in addition to community outreach programs to prevent violence, governments should prosecute people who commit xenophobia offenses.
But what we are saying is we need people to be educated. We need those that perpetuate, you know, xenophobia, that attack migrants in particular, to have a stiffer sentence. They must be caught and prosecuted. And that is the best way that will ensure that people are discouraged from doing it.
The Nigerian High Commissioner says another way to prevent violence is to implement an early warning mechanism his government agreed to with South Africa. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Pretoria.
Sudan's Defense Minister, Field Marshal Jamal Idin Omar, today said his country is looking forward to further military cooperation with the United States. He made the comments today in an interview with the Al Hura television network in Washington. Omar, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdel Hamdok, and other officials are in Washington as part of efforts to persuade the United States and other Western governments to lift sanctions against Sudan. They also hope to persuade Washington to drop Sudan from the list of nations that support terrorism. Omar says they began talks with the U.S. State Department yesterday. Omar noted Sudan's efforts to fight terrorism. He also pointed out that Khartoum continues to work with Saudi Arabia and Egypt to safeguard the Red Sea. He also said that Sudan faces internal pressure because of its fragile economy, and that could lead to further chaos. The delegation also hopes to tap new foreign aid on this trip. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is carrying out a mass distribution of non-food items to thousands of flood-affected members of a South Sudan community that hosts refugees to help them rebuild their lives. Devastating floods in the area have left hundreds of thousands of people homeless. Dimo Silva Aurelio visited the community in Maban recently and has the story.
It is the first time since floods destroyed many South Sudanese homes about a month ago that villagers and refugees in Maban are receiving blankets, plastic sheets, mosquito nets, and other supplies from the UN Refugee Agency. UNHCR calls it a multi-sectoral response to the thousands of flood victims in this part of the country. 25-year-old Thomas Stephen, a mother of five, says this year's flood have made life extremely difficult. She says heavy flooding hit the area three times in the last few weeks. She says the first few times, villagers sought shelter on the road where the ground is higher. The third time, she says, people sought shelter under trees. Speaking in Arabic, Stephen says she is grateful to receive plastic sheeting and blankets to protect her children from rain and wind.
I have not had any shelter since the flood started. And now that I have gotten, and when I get like this, I will be able to make a tent to help me. The water has dried, but I have not yet returned to my house. I'm still staying on the road because it is still wet.
Rehab Bata, a mother of six, resides in Guling from Old Bunj Payam. Bata received two plastic sheets, two mats, two blankets, and mosquito nets. Speaking in Arabic, she says she lost everything she owned in the floods.
People who have many children were busy taking them to safer places. By the time they returned, they found nothing. The water took everything, including the bed and clothing.
Magog Dengali, UNHCR's associate field officer in Maban, says his agency is first distributing aid to the most vulnerable people.
We have started the distribution to host community in Koral Ahmar Payam, that was last week, and we covered 2,000 households. And today we are distributing non-food items to 3,300 households.
Dengali says the distribution is timely and will help change the situation for most for the host communities in Maban.
Our target is 50,000, which is approximately of 10,000 households. And this population is being served in five payams of Greater Maban. As we know that Greater Maban has two counties, and in these two counties we have five payams.
The flooding has displaced more than 150,000 refugees and 57,000 members of the host community, washing away farms, houses, and most of people's belongings. The UN World Food Program has provided some emergency food and car support for many refugee families. Malar Maharaja Smith, head of UNHCR's field office in Maban, says it is important that in such crisis, both the host community and refugees get the same assistance.
This is the kind of support that we have been providing. And also you could see that in terms of water and sanitation, the host community has also been very much affected. So we have had assessments being done at the field level to the areas of the host community to try to help them, you know, rebuild their latrines, rebuild their shelters.
Smith says flood mitigation surface and studies must be conducted so that aid workers can properly respond to natural disasters like this one in the future.
The scale of the floods this year took us a little bit off guard, and now we realize with climate change, the environment is changing as well, and that this could happen again maybe even next year.
Heavy rains due to climatic changes have caused devastating floods across East Africa, displacing thousands of people not only in South Sudan, but also in Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. According to the Famine Early Warning System Network, or FEWS, unusually heavy rains are expected to swamp much of East Africa for the rest of December. The so-called short rain season in the region normally ends by October, but rain has fallen steadily. More than 250 people have died in floods and mudslides in Uganda, Tanzania, South Sudan, Somalia, Kenya, and Ethiopia. There are concerns that the rains will reduce harvests by flooding fields or ruining harvested grain. However, the FEWS network says the rains also have helped replenish water resources and revive grasslands that had suffered under a long drought. Although new HIV infections have dropped by 30% in Eastern and Southern Africa and 8% for West and Central Africa, UNAIDS warns that there is an alarming increase in infections in key populations. The agency says those groups include men who have sex with men, transgender people, and sex workers. Eugene Uimana has more from an international conference on AIDS in Africa in Kigali.
The security is zero in Nigeria for sex workers.
Emmanuel Mwabrije is a 33-year-old sex worker with the National Sex Workers Association in Nigeria. She started what she calls her career when she was 12, and she says the stigma keeps her and others away from health facilities.
As a sex worker, you visit any government hospital, you are being criminalized. The stigma is harsh. Once they notice you are a sex worker, when they even notice you are living with HIV and you are a sex worker, it becomes the worst. The talk of time. People make mockery of you when you walk along the way. People call you names. You understand? So that is even increasing the chance of this new HIV. Because one, if I am HIV positive and you are my partner, I won't tell you. I'll keep calm. You keep making love to me without condom. You keep having sex with me without condom. And you also have another girlfriend. And you have a wife.
Members of the LGBT community say they have a similar problem. Lodi Azaglo comes from Ghana. Esther Adhiambo is from Kenya.
K people belonging to the KP populations have been stigmatized, have been discriminated amongst at various health facilities, among communities. So then they tend to crawl in their shells and not come out to probably seek medical attention. So as a result, having the increased number in STIs and then HIV among the people.
But then when you go to hospital, they say, oh, do you have a partner? They say, it's another woman. They're like, wait, what? Then that is where the moment someone changes their facial expression when you tell them about who you're dating, it actually changes how you're going to be open about what's ailing you.
They spoke on the sidelines of the 20th International Conference on AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Infections in Africa going on this week in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. The United Nations Agency Fighting HIV and AIDS says worldwide more than half of new HIV infections are among such vulnerable populations, which also include people in prison and those who inject illegal drugs. Winnie Byanyima, the UN AIDS Executive Director, urges government to improve the rights of sexually marginalized Africans if they want to contain the spread of the virus. She and other HIV experts say Africa needs to make sure no one is left behind.
These groups of people are not testing, are not getting on treatment because their rights continue to be denied.
UNAIDS says nearly 40 million people were living with HIV/AIDS last year, and about 26 million of them were in sub-Saharan Africa. Around 16 million of the African patients are taking life-saving antiretroviral medications. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Escalating police brutality in Zimbabwe has spread to human rights activists, leaving citizens traumatized and increasingly frustrated with the government's policies. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Douglas Coulthard, a Zimbabwean human rights lawyer, was allegedly assaulted by several police officers recently at the Harare Central Police while trying to see his client, Obed Masaraore. Coulthard has been representing the president of the Association of Rural Teachers of Zimbabwe in the organization's fight for better working conditions. Coulthard told VOA that Masaraore was arrested, but it wasn't clear what the charge was. Police allowed Coulthard to see him. Coulthard says as he was trying to negotiate Masaraore's relief, Chief Inspector Majomos refused to say why Masaraore was being held and threatened to forcibly remove the lawyers. Coulthard says as he attempted to record the incident, police forced him to leave. He told Majomos he was going to file a report with the controller's office. While he was making the report, Coulthard says Majomos and six other police officers in riot gear grabbed him, dragged him into a corridor, and assaulted him with boot-clad feet, shin pads, and buttons for approximately 5 minutes.
So it's really concerning. I mean, for me, the biggest concern is that if this is what I can experience as a lawyer in the central police station in the middle of Harare, in the middle of the day, how much worse is going to be experienced by someone in some unknown police station, some unknown person? For me, it's indicative of how pervasive the police brutality is throughout our nation.
International and Zimbabwean human rights groups say the country's police in the past few years have committed a number of gross human rights violations and assaults on civilians. Activists say since no police officer has yet been suspended or charged for abuses, the police act with impunity. Coltart says he spent several hours in detention and negotiated his release by agreeing not to personally sue Majomos.
The other important thing is not to paint all police with the same brush, because what I've experienced this year is that even within our police force, there are good people who are trying to do the right thing, but there's immense pressure from the top for them to commit these human rights abuses. For me, this incident is less about me and the individual police officers involved, and more what it says about the system that fosters police brutality.
Police spokesperson Paul Nyati says, quoted, like everyone else, is free to make a police report. But rights observers say the assault of a lawyer carrying out his professional duties is a deterrent for ordinary citizens to approach police. Coltart says he believes Zimbabwe police need retraining on their duties under the constitution to avoid abuses. Masarore was released later after being charged and fined for disorderly conduct. Coltart is suing the police for the alleged assault. He says he thinks the government uses police as a tool.
The Zimbabwe regime, they are fighting for two things, really. It's all about retention of power, but the deeper reason is about control of resources. It's all about mass accumulation of wealth for a tiny political elite, military political elite at the top. And they're willing to basically use any means possible to hang onto their loot.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights group condemned the attack on Coltart, noting it was the second time in 3 months police have attacked it. The group said the alleged attack violates the constitution and Zimbabwe's obligations under international human rights agreements. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondol.
Authorities in Sudan today are investigating the factory fire that killed at least 23 people, an explosion through a tile factory in Sudan's capital Khartoum yesterday. More than 130 people were injured, many of them critically. There are concerns the death toll will rise. Witnesses said a gas tanker caught fire and exploded next to the factory as it was unloading cargo. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the International Day for the Disabled Persons is commemorated on December 3rd. Disability on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.